Welcome once again to the resurrection of DMOU, Destination Marketing Organization University, and I am your host, Bill Geist. At the dawn of the millennium, DMOU was one of the most innovative distance learning platforms in the destination marketing organization space. During that time, we interviewed over 150 of the best and the brightest in our field, as well as those from complementary disciplines, sharing innovative ideas to drive our industry forward. Alas, business got in the way, and it just became impossible to maintain a 3-show-a-month, 60-minute format distributed on CD and cassette. How quaint, but it rocked in its day. So we set DMOU aside, and we focused on our clients. But we never lost affection for DMOU, and we would always smile fondly when our DMO friends would remind us that they had been subscribers. Well, DMOU is back. And it's with a new twist on a cool idea. No more subscriptions or one-off CD sales. DMOU is now free. No more CDs. DMOU is now a podcast. And no more 60-minute programs. We'll talk with our guests for as long as it takes for them to inspire you. The new format, 3 questions and a bonus round. Some of these podcasts may go 10 minutes. Some could go 30. We just don't know. And that's going to be the fun part of bringing DMOU back. It's charting new territory. And that's what makes DMO Pros tick. So strap in, engage thrusters, and enjoy the ride. DMOU is back and sponsored today by Total Destination Marketing. Bill Baker is one of those random people you meet at random places. In our case, it was Monaco. And you just click. Bill is one of a handful of practitioners in destination branding that nails it every single time with his 7A process, where so many destination brands fall flat. Bill's work over the past couple decades has been simply stellar. He is the author of Destination Branding for Small Cities, and he has just released his new book, Place Branding for Small Cities, Regions, and Downtowns. And for more, check out his website at destinationbranding.com. And now on to our show. Our guest today is Spiro Battistatos. 30 years ago this year, he was selected to lead what is now known as the South Shore Convention and Visitors Authority. During his first 12 years, he increased the organization's budget tenfold, facilitated the construction of one of this nation's premier visitor centers. Then it was off to lead the Atlantic City Convention and Visitors Authority, where he led an aggressive marketing campaign to support Southern New Jersey's $8 billion tourism industry. And 14 years ago, he returned to the community that he loves to lead the South Shore CVA once again. Spiro has served on the board of directors for the Travel Industry Association of America, will be serving as an at-large director for the U.S. Travel Association's board of directors for 2 years, holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Economics and Public Policy from Indiana University, and has completed Destination International's Professional Certification Program, and he is one of a handful of FCDMEs in the world. Spiro Battistatos, welcome to DMOU.
Bill, how are you, my friend?
It was great to see you a couple of weeks ago, and thank you for turning me on to one of Chicago's hidden gems and best restaurants in the world.
Well, it's no wonder that we picked that place to get married in, and it was the only third time in the restaurant's history that they allowed the main dining room to be used for a wedding.
So that tells you
how often I get up there, and it's just fabulous food, outstanding service, and we're talking about the Greek Islands for all of you out in DMOU podcast land. If you get there and don't know what to order, call me and then put the phone in the server's hand and I will order dinner for you.
In Greek.
In Greek.
Absolutely. So you have done something, well, you've done several things on the South Shore that are just kind of game-breaking, rule-changing, throw-the-playbook-out-the-window kind of stuff. And so what we really wanted to get to in this edition of DMOU is one of your most recent, I'm going to call it an innovation. So our first question, to lead a campaign to encourage residents of one state to jump the state lines to move, not just visit, but to move to another state is so far out of the traditional mold of who we are, or maybe I should say who we have been as DMOs. I got to ask you, where did the idea for the grass is greener come from?
Well, you're actually forgetting where it came from. I can tell by the nature of your question. It came from you. when you were our Tourism Day speaker a couple of years ago, I watched the look on the more traditional economic development guests that we had in the room when you made the following comment. Hospitality and tourism is always the first date of economic development. And that resonated with me. And I watched my guys from NIPSCO and from economic development organizations and others kind of pause for a minute. And it gave us a legitimacy that while we always had, I think it was the missing link for them to come to understanding how economic development and CVBs can work together. And so we took that, and as you know, we watch everything in the South Shore is Chicago-based. All of our major media is the Chicago TV stations. You know, we're driven by Chicago. We're in the same time zone, the whole thing. And over the past few years, you'd have to be living under a rock to not see how easy Illinois has made it to recruit business and residents out of Illinois. We don't have to go into, and I'm not going to disparage my neighbors and how they run the state. I think it was best summarized by our governor at a luncheon last year when he said, when you ask a former governor of Indiana and a former governor of Illinois for their cell number, you get two distinctly different kind of numbers. And I think that says about everything you need to say. There's a pretty deep problem in Illinois. The budgets run away. The taxation is unbelievable. And it just continues to escalate. So I stole your idea, Bill, and pitched to a handful of people, we call it the Founding Five, at a lunch and said, look, we've been doing business with people from Illinois for a long time. They come over here, they recreate, they enjoy the dunes, they've come to the casinos. They know who we are from a visitor point of view. Let's do a little ad campaign. And we tried it, the creative. I didn't take any ownership or pride in the authorship because it ultimately failed. But it was a creative campaign that said, remember our first date? And it was a couple walking through some of our more prominent attractions. And then the tagline was, let's make it more official. Will you move in with me? And it was signed the state of Indiana.
Okay.
We tested that creative against the grass is greener. And we did it in two different areas. One, County Light Orchard, which just explodes in October with Illinois residents, and Notre Dame. And my idea of the first date didn't work, which is fine. But ultimately, the grass is greener did. And we really wanted to pitch to them the 10 attributes that we think are important for people to remember when they're looking at moving and where they live. And number one, lower property taxes. Another one is less commute time, four-star schools, in-state universities, lower cost of living, more house for your dollar. All of these things are the top 10 reasons from that you should move from Illinois to Indiana. So Centier Bank, NIPSCO, the Greater Northwest Indiana Association of Realtors, the Times Media Group, and ourselves are the Founding Five. We put $10,000 a year on the table, five-year commitment. We've raised against that in the first year another $40,000 at differing levels from other sponsors. And we're trying to get to $150,000 and then take it to the governor and have some IEDC, Indiana Economic Development Corporation, money to match it. So that we can continue to do this thing. It's an all-digital campaign. I can run you through some of the metrics on it and the campaign tactics, but it's been formalized what we already knew is going on in the region. And it just really puts a focus in a very positive light. Indiana, which sometimes has been at the brunt of a lot of Illinois jokes over the years, and it's been a very productive and very positive campaign.
So tell me how, though, a destination marketing organization that has been traditionally focused on visitors and not resident or corporation recruitment, how do you make the jump into just that? I mean, one could say that destination marketing organization means that you market the destination for every reason to every audience. And I think that that probably is our future. But most of us haven't gotten there. In fact, I'd say very few of us have gotten to where you've gotten, where that is the philosophy, that it's not just about the overnight or even the day tripper visitor. Philosophically, how did you get there? I mean, how did you take your destination marketing organization and place it in a position that is now so go-to for all economic development interests in Northwest Indiana?
To us, it was a logical extension, Bill. We need to continue to evolve as DMOs And we need to understand that if we keep trying to do what we did in the 90s and early 2000s, that, you know, we're going to be obsolete. And I'm pretty sure that there's a lot of people. I forget what room we were in when the speaker said, look, take a look around the room. Yeah. Half of you won't be here in 5 years.
I think it was Destinations International. I think it might have been Rick Antonsen who said that.
To us, this was a logical extension. We are trusted in the business community in Northwest Indiana and the region as the preeminent marketers of the area. And for us to say we have a marketing idea, whether it benefits growing residents, and what happens when we grow residents? We help the restaurant industry. We bolster our retail industry. We bring in the kind of paychecks from Illinois that help our statistics in attracting more high-profile retail. So, you know, we can't just look at what's this do for our hotels. We've got to look at what's this do for parks and rec? What's this do for gaming? What's this do for food and beverage? What's this do for retail? What's this do for all the other things that happen when you're growing communities? And it also helps us in our pursuit of quality of place. So given the outstanding partnerships that we have with the Northwest Indiana Forum, with Lake County Economic Alliance, with various chambers, and more importantly, all of the elected officials, to us, it was like putting one foot in front of the other, and let's do this. And we're the marketing experts. We know how to sell ourselves. So whether we're using a picture of a beach or a house in St. John that is, you know, the same size as your house in Brookfield with one third of the taxes and 25 years newer, marketing is marketing. So, you know, we got the founding five together. They trusted us. We didn't own anything or try to force our agenda down anybody. And the collaboration and the partnership that we've achieved with the universities and banks and private sector actors positioned us to be, you know, with the Northwest Indiana Times, the logical partners on this. And I've got to tell you, the Times 10,000 and our 10,000 is real 10,000. There's no in-kind in there. So the Times does all the ad buy for free. We monitor and built the website. We do all of that stuff here for free. So our respective 10,000s each go strictly to the digital buy. There's none of that fluffed up, well, I'll give you my staff and we're going to count that as, no, uh-uh. It's 10 grand into the cost.
In so many destinations, what we see is that the Economic Development Group wants to be the marketers for economic development, and the DMO wants to be the marketers for visitors. But I think you said it perfectly. At the end of the day, no disrespect to economic development, because they are great at what they do, but they tend generally not to be the marketers. They tend to be the deal makers. They tend to be the facilitators. Their skill set tends not to be in really hard-hitting marketing. And that is our strong suit over on the DMO side. So tell me, was it the relationships that you have built? And how can other destinations take this concept and say, and go to their economic development brethren and partners and say, hey, we can help here? Tell me how that all worked out. I mean, is it the relationships, or was it that these guys just didn't have a sense of pride of their own marketing ability?
I think, Bill, it's been, from our point of view, building the relationships within those rooms over the past, for me, you know, 15 years since I've been back here. I'm the legislative committee chairman for the Northwest Indiana Forum, a 7-county economic development group.
Okay.
I've been in that position now for more than a decade. So I'm in the room, and I would urge our peers to do that. It is a fair amount of cross-pollination that's going on. And so when you're in the room and you're working on committee work and you're doing the work of another organization and you're continually reminding them, you know, we are the marketers. This is what we're doing. You have a chance to refer to some of the other stuff that you're doing. You move that needle over time to the point where, yeah, if we're going to talk about marketing, we better be talking to the South Shore CVA. And it's not one of saying, hey, Forum, you don't know what you're doing. No, you're right. They are great deal closers. They know the industrial and open properties and warehouse spaces, and they're fantastic, which is why I donate time and treasure to making sure they're successful. We have to talk about the lane that we're in as DMO CEOs And we have to remind people every day, whether it's the bank president, the utility economic developer, the you know, individual economic development group, the local media, this is kind of our lane. And here's how our lane works for you. And if they're reminded long enough, I think that's why we see the fruits of this labor and the trust. I mean, it is about trust, and that is earned over time.
So tell us the results. And I think the biggest result probably is that everybody's re-upping for another year of this Grass is Greener campaign. But then beyond that, what does the Move to Indiana program mean for the destination marketing industry as a whole? Is this our new direction?
Well, let me see if I can answer the first question and briefly recap for you, you know, some of what our tactics were. Was audience extension, mobile ad messenger, and sponsored Facebook posts based on seasonality to reach target audiences. Why? We wanted to reach our target audience based on who they are and where they are. Their behaviors and patterns include searching on Zillow, Trulia, apartments.com, those kinds of places. So this is a 100% digital campaign. There is no print, nothing other than what's going to show up on your phone. So when we take a look at those tactics, specifically audience extension, as all your listeners know, the industry average for a digital campaign and audience extension will come back at a click-through rate of somewhere between 0.05 and 0.08. That's the national industry average, according to our information that we're using when we talk to our partners, as verified through Amplified Media and the Northwest Indiana Times. Our audience extension to homeowners, with our clicks at almost 2,600 impressions, 1.78 million, click-through rate, 15%.
Wow.
Audience extension on intent to move, 0.15, 0.20, and then audience extension total, the average, 0.17. So we are doubling or tripling results on click-through in audience extension. In March and April of last year, we spent $4,000 a month. May through December, we did $5,000. We split it. Our two markets there are intent to move and homeowners. The greater demographic is young married couples with children under five and empty nesters. That's where we're seeing the greatest results in Illinois, because once they're in the school system, people are a little more hesitant, and I think that's going to continue to erode.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing great success with, you know, kids under 6 or 5 years old and those 55 plusers where they're out of college, they're living in Austin or Chicago or wherever they are, and they're looking around going, why do I have this 3,000 square foot house where my property taxes are 21 grand and I can move to Indiana in a new 2,200 square foot, brand new gated community home and pay $4,000 a year in taxes?
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing there. So I had touched on a few of the other reasons to move, but our mobile ad messenger, again, click-through rate there, we know pretty much industry average, 0.08. Brace yourself for this number. 8,450 clicks in March through August last year, 1.6 million impressions. Click-through rate, 0.53.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, we just continue to see great numbers. And then with the mobile ad messenger creative, which, like I said, I'll give you a link so you can see this information. But when you it's all basically phone driven, Bill, and we're showing up. If you're on looking at ESPN, we're going to grab you. It's just been very, very successful. Facebook, click through traditionally 0.9. I won't bore you with the numbers. We're getting 3.22. Again, more than triple the result.
Yeah.
I wish I could run some of our digital campaigns and get these numbers, quite frankly.
Well, but it's a great message. I mean, and I love the fact that, you know, of your top 10 reasons to cross the line is one that people, I think it's the physicality of a arbitrary state line. But there are places in Lake County that you can get downtown Chicago faster than you can from the western suburbs. And that just, that's the kind of a really that grabs people and makes them say, tell me more.
And it's true. And if, you know, if you were coming from one of the western suburbs to meet at Greek Islands and Amy and I were leaving St. John, I'd beat you there every time.
Absolutely. So the second part of the question, what does the Move to Indiana program mean for us in the destination marketing world as a whole?
the takeaway I see for our peers, perhaps, is evaluating the landscape around you. Our landscape right now happened to point to move to Indiana. If you're in the middle of some other state somewhere that you're not on a state line in a major market with a neighbor who's got financial crisis, you know, this isn't going to work for you. But there's something going on that you should be in tune with. And if we continue to be the group that talks about only heads and beds or cheeks and seats, you're going to be one of those people that, you know, aren't going to be here in 5 years. We continue to just take a look at where can we be relevant? Where can we do, you know, no one can disintermediate us from this process. And I think that's where successful DMOs have to be looking is, you know, Google is going to be a continual threat. All the other technology that's around us is crawling into our space. So what is the relevance that our community needs from us, and how do we continue to be a value-added proposition for everyone in our community? And I think that's the takeaway for, I hope, for our peers. I don't know if the grass is greener works for anybody else in America. I mean, maybe it does for somebody in Connecticut next to New York. Maybe it does in, you know, Hoboken for New York. But the relevance is the takeaway in my mind, and maybe others would see it differently.
Well, I think the takeaway is that economic development are our partners. They always should have been our partners. And I think that there was that time in the 90s and early 2000s where people were jockeying for position or possibly jockeying for funding. And we saw each other not necessarily as partners, but as potential adversaries in visibility, revenue, whatever it may be. And today we have to understand that this is a really symbiotic relationship that plays well for both of us. Yeah. Okay. So to the bonus round, as much as we wanted to talk about your background as an accordion player, which is so out of brand for Spiro Battistanos, I think a more important bonus round question, but I wanted to give you a tip of the hat for being able to play the accordion. The bonus round question where I want to go is completely separate from operating in the workforce development and economic development arena. The South Shore CVA does something that is also so off the playbook that I have to ask. Tell us about the South Shore daycare program.
Well, I thought you were going to ask me about being a mybologist and my vast collection of marbles that you saw when you were at the house. I thought that was the question.
I did.
The South Shore child care program was actually born in the mid-90s. I had an outstanding number two, Kathy Rissick. Kathy had remarried and was starting another family, and came in and was suggesting that perhaps she was going to resign when the child was born, and I couldn't afford to lose her. And we were at that point in the organization where we were starting that trajectory from this $200,000-$400,000 a year organization to who we are now. Kathy really was a co-creator of the culture. And, you know the culture of our organization probably as well as anyone.
I do.
And I was bringing my dog, Axel, to work every day. And Axel was sitting in the office, and I was listening to Kathy. And I said, Kathy, if it will help, bring the baby to work. And she kind of looked at me. She goes, "You serious?" I said, "Absolutely." And Carolyn, who is now 22, was our first in-office child care baby. She was around a little longer than most of them were. Carolyn probably spent the better part of the first year of her life at the Bureau. We've now refined the policy a little bit too. It's about the first 4 to 5 months where we allow any parent, any position in the organization, to bring their newborn to work. And we will arrange facilities in their office, or if they need another office, if, you know, if they're in a cubicle or a space that's not private, I can't tell you how many of our staff have said, "Oh, put the baby's crib in my office. I can't wait to do it." And we've had now 15 children come through the program. And the interesting thing is that we tested two of them a couple of years ago, Peyton and Oliver, And we brought in a teaching expert, and they did some interaction and found that these children were months and months and months advanced in their audio and however they judge this. And I'm going to sound stupid because I can't tell you exactly. But the finding was that because they were in this environment where they heard language and conversation and music and just were interacting from such a young age, that they were going to be positioned to be better students and better learners down the road. And with Carolyn and Regan and Mitch, which were the first three, Carolyn was Kathy's baby. Regan and Mitch are Katie, who is our number two today, our executive VP and chief operating officer. Regan is now graduating Purdue, and Mitch is a freshman at Butler. We're seeing signs as these kids progress that there's some real value to not only the parents' peace of mind and the sense. And again, you've seen this staff, Bill, for more than 20 years. You know, when I say the word "we're a family," how much I mean that. But there's some really great benefits for the kids themselves that we're seeing as being able to be in this environment for the first 4, 5, 6 months of their lives.
And it works on so many different levels. I mean, I didn't know about the cognitive changes and advantages that kind of socialization and interaction during their formative months has. But you're also able to maintain a stellar level of talent and young talent that is, spawning, that you would lose or have the chance to lose if you didn't provide this opportunity. So, I mean, on one side, it makes the organization better, but it's fascinating that it also makes the kids better.
Well, it's, the cognitive advantages was something that just kind of came to me as I'm watching now the older, the first 4 or 5 kids, they're college kids now or graduating, and they've all been wildly successful. And so it just kind of occurred to me one day, it's like, well, why don't we, and to make it a direct correlation is obviously a stretch, but it's one of, I believe, one of the cards in the deck of these kids' lives is having great parents, great environment, smart people, but we're able to help out. And you're right, for me, selfishly, while a lot of my peers have spent time in, other major national boards and committing and doing great work, the work we've done here with this team, I have one of the best DMO teams in America, period. And the reason we do is that because the loyalty, the culture, the fun that we have here in the true sense of family, I could go on, Bill, I could go on for hours about what this team means and does for each other. And the in-office childcare program is just one example of that. And, right now our board is considering, as we look at benefits and staying competitive, right now we have a draft policy on family building and care, not only daycare, but parental care. And the board is putting together a menu of options that will help people with if they have to provide care for a family member, adoption, in vitro. We're taking a look at that because we realize if we're going to stay competitive, we have to provide benefits that are important to the people that we've recruited.
And you actually had all of the kids, or at least almost all of the kids, back for a reunion recently, right?
We did for our 30th, yeah. And it's a shame it's a podcast. I could have somebody put it on our website so you can come see it. But we had the oldest, Carolyn, holding at the time the youngest, Oliver. And then Regan, Katie's daughter, was holding the second youngest, which was Peyton. You'll recall, because I know you were there, Peyton and her two brothers, Nate and Maverick, were the flower girl, ring bearer, and usher at our wedding. Those kids are now, basically, I think, 11, 9, and 6. We don't want to brag about it too much, but we've got this really successful culture that we're really, really proud of. So while you may not see Spiro Battistatus and Katie Holder be at a lot of industry events and things that are going on, we're here focused on taking care of what this organization stands for and delivers in the community.
And that's one of the reasons that we wanted you on this podcast. Spiro, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule for us. It is always fun to share great stories, and you have so many, and we probably should come back in a year or so and reconnect and do this once again for some of the other stories. But it's also a real honor to do this with such a great friend as you. So thank you so much, Spiro, for joining us on DMOU. That's it for this edition of the Resurrected DMOU. Tell your friends and peers that we are back, and we're looking forward to sharing, as we said on the original website, innovative ways to tell people where to go. So thanks again to our sponsor, Total Destination Marketing. Bill Baker's new book, Place Branding for Small Cities, Regions, and Downtowns, is out now. You can find it where else? On Amazon.com, but you can also find it on his website. DMOPros.com is where you'll find links to the Z News, our knowledge bank, videos, blogs, and more, including our video testing service for DMOs called DMO Vision. That's DMOPros with a Z. Executive producer of DMOU is Terry White, and this is a production of DMO Pros. I'm your host, Bill Geist. Until next time.